neutrinos are everywhere. Our sun, like other stars, produces them by the trillion in nuclear reactions deep within its interior. Neutrinos are also created in supernova, and on a smaller scale, by nuclear reactors here on Earth. Yet despite being so common, neutrinos weren't detected until the 1950s, and they remain deeply mysterious. I'm Margaret Harris, reviews editor at Physics World. In this edition of the Physics World podcast, we'll be hearing from Ray Jayawardena, an astronomer at Canada's York University, who has recently written a book called The Neutrino Hunters. In the book, Jayawardena tells the story of how neutrinos were detected and explains why physicists find them so fascinating. I began by asking Jayawardena why neutrinos are so hard to study.
Neutrinos are, as I say in the book, pathologically shy particles. There are trillions and trillions of neutrinos passing through our bodies every second of day and night. And yet, thankfully, they leave no trace and cause no harm. But their elusive nature also means that it's very difficult for physicists to study their characteristics, because it's only once in a while that a neutrino would interact with a neutrino detector and leave a trace of its existence.
Neutrinos interact with other particles so rarely that in order to observe them, you need either a big detector or a strong source of neutrinos, and preferably both. Shortly after the Second World War, two American physicists, Clyde Cowan and Frederick Rhines, thought they'd found a solution to this problem.
Because they had worked with nuclear bombs and were familiar with test explosions and were comfortable around them, their first thought was to explode a nuclear bomb, because they knew that would produce a strong burst of neutrinos, and therefore they could set up their detector nearby and hope to register a handful of the neutrinos produced during that explosion.
Amazingly, Cowan and Rhines' idea of detecting neutrinos from a nuclear bomb got the green light from their bosses. Before they could try it out, though, Cowan and Rhines came up with a better plan. They decided to set up their detector near a nuclear reactor. Reactors don't produce as many neutrinos as bombs do, but they're a lot more reliable, and obviously safer. But Cowan and Rhines had a problem. Theory predicts that when a neutrino interacts with a proton, the proton will turn into a neutron and emit an anti-electron. When these two particles, in turn, interact with atoms in the detector, the result will be characteristic flashes of light, indicating that a neutrino was present. Unfortunately, Cowan and Rhines found that cosmic rays, highly energetic particles that fall onto the Earth from space, also produced flashes of light in their detector. Their solution for avoiding these false alarms set an important precedent for later neutrino experiments.
So this is the reason that that often neutrino experiments are located deep underground or deep under the ice, is to use the Earth itself or the layer of ice as a filter to filter out other types of radiation and particles, such as cosmic rays, which would be stopped by the layer of ground or the ice, whereas neutrinos have no trouble at all zipping right through and therefore reaching the neutrino experiments that physicists set up.
The experiments by Rhines and Cowan proved that neutrinos do, in fact, exist. But their experiments, which took place in the mid-1950s, were far from the end of the story. The next step was to learn more about how neutrinos behaved. That's where another important pair of physicists, Ray Davis and John Bacall, entered the picture. Jayawardena tells their story.
Well, Ray Davis, along with his theoretical collaborator, John Bacall, set out to detect the neutrinos produced in the nuclear furnace at the heart of the sun. Because the sun, if it's produced, if it's powered by nuclear reactions, should also be a strong source of neutrinos. And Ray Davis set out to record some of these solar neutrinos and therefore confirm independently what's happening at the heart of the sun. He set up his detector in a mine in South Dakota, and for decades he was registering many fewer neutrinos than John Bacall's theoretical calculations suggested should be reaching us from the sun. And this remained a big mystery. The solar neutrino problem, as it was called, or the solar neutrino deficit, was very hard to explain. There were concerns whether we didn't understand what was happening in the sun. In other words, that John Bacall's and other astrophysicists' models were incorrect, or that Ray Davis's experimental method for fishing out these neutrinos was not quite perfect. And it turned out at long last that both of them had indeed been correct all along. And the reason for the missing neutrinos turned out to be the chameleon-like nature of these particles.
What Jayawardena calls the chameleon-like nature of neutrinos is due to the fact that there isn't just one kind of neutrino. They come in three different types, or flavors, and as they travel through space, they oscillate between these three flavors, morphing from one to another and back again. But Davis's detector could only see one of these flavors, hence the deficit. The idea that neutrinos might oscillate didn't come out of the blue. Decades earlier, a theorist, Bruno Pontecorvo, had predicted that such oscillations would occur if the neutrino had a small mass. But in the 1970s, that was considered unlikely.
The original form of the standard model of particle physics developed starting in the 1970s assigned a mass of zero to neutrinos. In other words, they were considered to be massless particles. But through the discovery that neutrinos in fact come in multiple flavors and oscillate among them, now we know that neutrinos are not massless, so that's already in some sense a modification to the standard model of particle physics.
The fact that neutrinos have mass is, so far, the only firm evidence we have of physics beyond the standard model. Physicists hope that future neutrino research will reveal even more gaps in the theory. But Jayawardena also thinks that neutrinos could open up new horizons in his own field of astronomy.
Well, the most exciting prospect for neutrino astronomy, of course, is a supernova exploding in the Milky Way galaxy. In fact, in 1987, when a supernova was seen in the Large Magellanic Cloud, one of the satellite galaxies of the Milky Way, that was the first time that scientists registered neutrinos coming from beyond our solar system. A grand total of 24 neutrinos were recorded by three different neutrino experiments around the globe. Today's neutrino detectors are a lot more sensitive, a lot bigger, and therefore, if a supernova were to explode in our galaxy, there's a good chance that those detectors would register up to hundreds of thousands of neutrinos rather than a few dozen, and therefore reveal a lot about precisely how the supernova explosion unfolds. If you could follow the neutrino flux, the arrival of neutrinos and time their arrival, neutrinos would reveal whether that supernova explosion produced a neutron star or a black hole, because the neutrino stream would come to an abrupt end if the core of the supernova turned into a black hole. Whereas if it produced a neutron star as the remnant, then one would expect that neutrino stream to die down a bit more gradually.
The future of neutrino astronomy seems bright. In 2013, scientists working on the Ice Cube neutrino detector in Antarctica announced that they had detected neutrinos coming from beyond our solar system. Physics World picked this achievement as its breakthrough of the year, but it's possible that neutrinos and their antimatter cousins could hold the key to answering an even bigger question.
Finding out if there is a slight asymmetry between the characteristics of neutrinos and antineutrinos could tell us potentially how our universe came to be dominated by matter over antimatter, because we expect soon after the Big Bang there should have been equal amounts of both, and yet here we are in a universe dominated by matter. How that asymmetry came about is one of the most profound and difficult mysteries of cosmology.
From the matter-antimatter asymmetry to gaps in the standard model, many of the biggest questions in physics seem to revolve around neutrinos. Whether our experiments will prove up to the job of answering these questions is, of course, a separate matter. But one thing is clear. For a particle that mostly zips through the universe with barely a trace, the neutrino is turning out to be remarkably important. That brings us to the end of this podcast. We'll be back next month with another edition, and in the meantime, you can read a review of Ray Jayawardena's book, The Neutrino Hunters, on our website, physicsworld.com. There you'll also find all the latest physics news, analysis, and features. Thanks for listening, and goodbye.